Well, it is great being here with you tonight. Here's what I already know about you. If you're sitting here tonight, it's because you're already a man that's moving forward. Otherwise, you wouldn't be giving up a night like this. So it's really good to be here with you tonight. As we dive in about talking about being men that are on mission, being a mission-minded man, I'm going to be very honest with you about my story, because you don't end up at a place where you're living the mission that God has created you for and it be an easy road getting there. I've found in my own personal journey, there's actually a lot of pain in that. You're going to hear some of those stories. There's so much that we can learn, I think, from, my story, but also just how God has worked with men throughout history to bring them to a place where they're changing other people's lives and their own lives are changing, and literally nations are changing because men have been raised up and chosen to live the mission that God has for them. It was 6 years ago that I was sharing with a friend here in Northern Virginia, his name's Daryl, that I had mobilized 450 volunteers in the Sterling community to package 40,000 meals in less than 2 hours. And this businessman looked at me and he did exactly what you just did. He goes, wow. And it is, it's kind of one of those moments. That's impressive. The church that we were leading at the time was like 80 people. So that's huge growth, like right overnight. And so anyhow, he's celebrating this with me. And then he asked me this question. He goes, so what did you do with all the food? And I said, well, we sent it overseas to feed kids who are struggling with hunger. And then his next question sent everything sober. He goes, you sent it overseas to feed kids who are struggling with hunger? That's nice. Now, what are you going to do to feed the 60,000 children in Northern Virginia who are struggling with hunger? And I can tell you at that point, I didn't know that many kids were struggling with hunger right here in Northern Virginia. Loudoun County, Fairfax County, the two wealthiest counties in the country. When he asked me this question, it was as if I walked full throttle into a glass door unwillingly. It was just a face plant right there. Stopped me dead in my tracks. So why do I share this story with you? It's because beneath the surface of Daryl's question was a calling that God had for me to a personal mission. A mission that I have later come to discover was going to change my life forever. But not only change my life, but other people's lives. A few years ago, I attended the wedding of a friend at a lodge in the Rocky Mountains. And I was at this reception. The lodge is surrounded by these cascading peaks. And this was one of those weddings that there's no expense held back. The family had the money. All the stops are pulled. It was amazing. And I'm pretty sure that this reception that I was at was just pocket change for the father of the groom. I'm having a conversation with the father of the groom, and we're just talking about life and everything else. And then he turns to me and he says, I failed my son. I'm like, what? If you call this failing, can I be your son? Like, sign me up. He goes, you don't understand what I'm saying. When my son was growing up, I was more interested in building my business and making money than I was in teaching my son about Jesus. And as a result, I've lost my son. Here's a man who, from the outside in, every one of us in this room would look at his life and go, he's successful. He's got a growing business. He's got a good paying job. He has a pretty woman by his side. He has a kid, he owned a house, he saved for college, he's ready for retirement. He did an exceptional job providing for his family financially. We would look at him and go, he's got it all together. But when he makes that statement to me, do you hear his regret? Do you hear what's stirring in his soul? He gained the world and John lost his soul. You see, John was living the American dream, and yet without a personal mission He lost his son. And here's what I know. John isn't alone in this. I wish John's story was the only story like this, but it's not. And the reason I know that it's not is because I also have a story like that one. One that's personally painful. It was 10 years ago, Jeff just shared with you, that we moved to Northern Virginia with this vision of starting a new church. New church that would reach people who were far from God. And I can tell you that in the course of this journey, it took about $500,000 to launch this church over the course of 3 years. But money always comes with strings, doesn't it? And so there were certain expectations that were had that I needed to live to for that money to be given. And before you know it, we started this church, but the church wasn't in line with the mission that God has called me to as a man. And while I still love the people of this church that I had the opportunity of pastoring for so many years, my soul was dying because what I was doing in church wasn't aligning with the mission that God gave me as a man. Because I wanted to reach people that were far from God, and I ended up in my world running programs and living in this religious system that honestly burnt out my soul. And eventually, I closed the church. Now, I bet that most of us in this room have somewhat of a similar story. I bet at some point in your life, you've been in a job that doesn't align with your value system or your mission. Or you're involved in activities that don't align with who you are. And so what happens is that lifestyle or that job begins killing your soul because it doesn't align with who God created you to be. A few months ago, my neighbor said to me, he said, "I've been in IT for 20 years. And while this job has done a great job providing for my family, it's left my life empty. I want to work for something that's meaningful. I want to work for something that matters." Now, Randy, if we look at his life, Randy's doing what every man, right, is supposed to do. He's providing for his family. He's doing a good job at it. He's bringing financial security, and yet, in the core of who he is, he feels empty. Randy's living the American dream, but he's living it without a mission. And as a result, Randy is longing to be a mission-minded man. And again, Randy isn't alone in this. I bet most of us in this room, at some point in our journey, we've had the desire to work or to be part of a mission that's greater than a paycheck. I bet most of us in this room at some point have felt a longing to invest our lives in a mission that's greater than ourselves. Perhaps you felt the desire to risk everything that you have so that you can gain greater meaning. In fact, some of us in this room tonight may be feeling this. This could have been a conversation you've had within the last week. Here's the problem that most of us face, if not all of us face. When we fail to find our mission, we end up settling for an ordinary life. Now, think about this. John and Randy, in their stories, again, they're financially successful. Each of them, however, in their financial success that we would say you're winning, they're saying, "I'm losing." In their core of who they are, they're longing for more. At this point, because they didn't have a personal life mission, they're living ordinary lives. So when we fail to find our mission, we settle for someone else's dream. And in many cases, that's called the American dream. A dream that is safe, comfortable, and soft. And here's what I'm about to tell you. As men, It is time for us to wake up from this dream. You aren't created to live a life that is safe, comfortable, and soft. You are created for a life of adventure, of risk, and of faith, where you're making a difference in your family's life, in the community's life, and in the world. You're created for so much more. Author John Eldridge put it this way. He said, all attempts to find a safe life, to live by the expectations of others, just kill the soul in the end. That's not how we find life. And so if you've ever desired for your life to have a greater impact, here's what I want you to know. You're not alone. I've had that same desire for my life. So here's what I want you to do, is I want you to look around the room right now. Take your eyes off me. Just look around the room. This room is filled with men who share your desire to live for something more. If that wasn't the case, you wouldn't be sitting here tonight. You long for something more. But at some point in most of our journeys, we've settled for status quo. We've been stalemated by living somebody else's dream. But here's the good news. The good news is this. Most of us do long for something more. We do want to be a hero in other people's lives. We want to find a mission that's bigger than us, a mission that's worth more than a paycheck. We want to move from what is comfortable and invest our lives in a mission that matters. And here's the deal. That's exactly what God wants for you as well. He's inviting you into a greater mission. So you may be wondering, can God really give me a mission that's worth living? To answer that question, I want us to walk through the corridors of history to find the answer. Let's start with a man by the name of Moses. Moses is living what? An ordinary life as a ranch hand when God gives him the mission of setting an entire nation free from centuries of slavery. And he's not just setting a nation free, he's setting children free, women free, fathers free, families free. He's offering them the opportunity to live a new life. He's offering them a new way of living. He's offering them freedom for life and liberty. What we see in Moses' story is that he moves from what is ordinary to what is extraordinary because of an invitation. God invited him into a greater story, and he said yes. Let's look at David. David's living, again, an ordinary life, the life of a shepherd, when God invites him to protect Israel from the terror of the surrounding nations so that they can enter into a season of peace. God gives David the mission of leading the nation of Israel back to the values of God. David moves from shepherd to king, from status quo to mission. And then there's Jesus. Jesus takes fishermen and tax collectors, your normal, ordinary Joes, young men who have been rejected by other rabbis, and Jesus chooses to accept them just as they are. And then he turns their ordinary lives upside down and he invites them into an amazing adventure, an adventure that is going to change their lives forever and ultimately change the world that you're living in today. He mentors them in the way of wisdom. He gives them power and authority to lead people to God. And he sets them, as we just said, on a mission to change the world. A mission that's still changing people's lives today. A mission that, if you will let it, will change your life today. Because of an invitation. And so here's what God wants to do for every one of us in this room. He wants to take our ordinary lives and give us a mission that's worth living for. He's done it throughout history, and he's still doing it today. He wants to give you a mission that enables you to experience the fullness of life that he created you for. Jesus said, I have come to give you life and give you life to the full. Every one of us. And there's an invitation that comes with that, a question. And here's what I've found. I think you probably have too, as you look at other men who have changed the world because of mission, is that when you sign up for the mission that God created you for, it not only changes your life, but it changes other people's lives. How do I know this? Because God's done it for me. Even as I was a pastor for 21 years, I was always longing for greater impact. I was longing to inspire people to live at their highest potential. And then it happened. God invited me to shift from what was ordinary in my life to what's extraordinary. And he did it with one question. It was Daryl's question. That's nice. So now what are you going to do to feed the 60,000 children in Northern Virginia who struggle with hunger? 6 months after this challenge, I hosted another event. We called it Generosity Feeds. This time we mobilized 600 volunteers here in Sterling to package 40,000 meals in less than 2 hours. But what do you think was different this time? Every meal stayed local to feed children who are going hungry within 3 miles of where you're sitting right now. One question. Within 2 weeks of this event, I started getting calls from organizations and churches around the country going, hey, we hear what you just did in Northern Virginia. Would you be willing to come to our community and help us feed children in our community who are struggling with hunger? So being a visionary, I said yes. Now, honestly, I had no stinking clue what I was saying yes to. I just said yes. And then it got worse than that because I had no idea how to pull that off. It's one thing to do that locally. It's another thing to do that all the way across the country. What I learned in this moment is this, is that being a mission-minded man is uncomfortable. So while this was exciting, it was incredibly uncomfortable. And I got to be honest with you, at times, scary. I can tell you today, I'm still scared. And so in this story, what you're going to find is that being a mission-minded man is just flat out uncomfortable. And it's not just uncomfortable for you. If we look at the characters that we just saw from history, look at Moses. Do you think he was comfortable confronting Pharaoh? Look at David. Do you think he enjoyed being hunted by Saul before he became king? Look at Jesus' disciples. Were they at ease when they were running for their life the night that he was arrested? So I can tell you this, my transition wasn't comfortable either. It isn't comfortable today. And so you may be wondering why. I remember walking into my living room one night as Generosity Feeds was getting off the ground and looking at my wife and saying this, honey, Stephanie, I need to write a $15,000 check as a capital investment to feed children in North Carolina. And of course, my wife had reservation. I told her that I would likely be able to pay back this investment within 6 weeks. And then I used two famous last words. Trust me. And she did. So 8 weeks later, I walk back into the same living room. I look at my wife and I go, honey, just so you know, I've not been able to pay us back on that first $15,000 investment. I believe that everything's going to work out on that, but I need to write a second $15,000 check as investment capital so that we can now feed children in Oregon. I can tell you this, it wasn't writing the check that scared me. It was asking my wife if I could write the check. My wife was so gracious to me in that moment. And so we wrote the checks. But here's 6 weeks turned into 4 months of not recouping an investment. I don't know about you, but I can tell you that I do not get paid half of what many of you in this room get paid. And I certainly didn't as a pastor. And so for me, $30,000 capital out of my pocket, there's a price tag to that. And not only was it uncomfortable, but it was scary. I want you to think about your favorite movie for just a moment. Bring yourself to the kind of that pivotal scene where everything is going to work or it's not going to work. The main character is in his defining moment. As you're watching the screen, you can see the fear in his eye. You can feel the anxiety rising within you for him. Everything in you in this moment wants to break the silence of the theater and scream right through the screen so this main character can hear it. And you just want to say, don't stop now. You're almost to the other side. This is exactly what it's going to feel like for most any man as you transition from what's ordinary to what's extraordinary. As you transition from what's ordinary into the mission that God has created for you. It's uncomfortable and it can be downright scary. But I can tell you this, it's life-giving. Tonight I want to invite you to do something with me. I want to invite you to step beyond your comfort zone to a life of greater purpose. I want to invite you to step away from what is ordinary to capture what's extraordinary. And all that takes is extra. I want to invite you to embrace risk as the theme of your life. I want to invite you to abandon the American dream so that you can live the dream that God has for you. I want to invite you to live the mission that God created for you, a mission that is unique to you, a mission that gives you meaning beyond a paycheck, a mission that will change your life and change other people's lives forever. I want to invite you to be what I would call a mission-minded man. Now, if this invitation intrigues you, then you're probably wondering this. How do I go about discovering my personal mission? How do I find this? A friend recently asked me this question. He said, what do you think my personal mission is? And the answer was simple. To inspire men to live authentic. When he asked this question, there was no hesitation in my answer. Why? Because I know him. I see him. I watch him work. I watch how he interacts with other men. I hear the message of his heart. His mission is so ridiculously clear to me. Here's what I found. When we look at our reflection in a mirror, we see ourselves backwards. But when others look at us, they see us as we are. And so if you want to know your personal mission, it's as simple as making an ask. This last weekend, I was at a wedding up in Maryland. And as I was sitting again at the reception, gentleman to me, to the right of me, his name's Mike. I said, hey, so tell me what you do for a living. He goes, well, I started and I own, run a landscape company. I'm like, that's awesome. Great job. I know it's hard work what you're doing, not just, you know, taking care of people's lawns and all of this, but running a business is hard work. I get that. He goes, yeah, I guess it's good because I'm actually thinking about selling the company. I said, why is that? He goes, because I want to do something that has more meaning. I look straight over at his fiance and I go, so what do you think Mike's mission is? Without hesitation, his fiance rattles it off. So the question is, do you want to know your personal mission? If so, it's as simple as asking. All you have to do is ask a question. Which makes me wonder this. When was the last time you went to your wife and said, honey, what do you think my personal life mission is. When was the last time you went to a trusted friend to give you their insight on your mission? If you want to know your personal life mission, it's simple. Ask. And here's the deal with it. Keep asking until you find it. Ask yourself, ask God, ask your spouse, ask a trusted friend. Simply ask. Let the power of a question change your life as it's changed mine. As a result of a simple question, here's what I can tell you in my own life. As a result of a simple question, my wife, my children, and I get to live a mission that I never thought I'd be living. I'm feeding hungry children in every county across America. Do I look like a foodie to you? It doesn't align. But there's something beyond just feeding kids. We have the opportunity to inspire other people to live to their highest potential while feeding hungry kids in every county across America. And in this journey, here's what's been happening. Children and parents who have come from generations of poverty are now breaking a poverty cycle. Business leaders are being inspired to do good while doing business by using their profits to serve people. Families are experiencing God's love and forgiveness for the very first time, and they're learning to follow Jesus. And in the last 6 years, we've had the opportunity to feed hundreds of thousands of children across this country. And what's even better than that? It's brought me into a world where I get to rub shoulders with unchurched people, men and women, amazing business leaders who are so far from God. You know what every one of them needs? A pastor. And so, though I may not be pastoring a church, I closed that. I'm still a pastor beyond the walls of a church. Because God invited me into a mission that He created me for. I can tell you it's uncomfortable. I can tell you it's still scary. Especially when you're talking with a CEO of the fastest growing restaurant chain in America after he's given you $400,000. And he goes, Ron, we're on this phone call for one reason. I want to know you have what it takes. It's scary. But people's lives are changing. Now, here's the catch. This is where I'm at today. It's been a 6-year journey. And if you're anything like me, when I think dreams, when I have vision, when I think mission, I want to start really big. But most missions don't start big. The mission that God called me to started with one question that then led to a conversation at my dining room table with my wife and one other man. That's where the mission began. It began with feeding one kid. And so too often we get caught thinking that we have to begin big, but it's not the case. In most cases, we need to begin small. So I want you to imagine this with me for just a moment. If every man in this room were to live the mission that God has created you for, what do you think would happen? I already know. I think you do too. Single moms in Sterling and in this area would have a support network. Fatherless boys would have mentors. Foster children would be raised in godly homes. And this is just the starting point. Company profits would be used to increase the well-being of their employees' families and be making investments in the local community. Local economy would be strengthening. And catch this, this isn't just a one-hit wonder. Because when this type of mission gets played out, here's what I can tell you. The effect of this kind of mission extends for generations to come. It's not just today. And it all begins with a question. What's your mission? So tonight, I want to invite you to become a mission-minded man by asking God, your spouse, and trusted friends to speak into your life as to what your mission is. Let's pray. Jesus, I just pray for every man in this room. That Father, regardless of where we're at in our spiritual journey, that you would help every one of us move from what is ordinary in life into what's extraordinary. That you would satisfy the deepest longings of our heart and our soul for making a difference in our community, in our work, in our play, in our families. And Father, as I just ask too, that as every man accepts this invitation to discover their personal mission, that Father, you would continue to change the face of Northern Virginia. Change the face of families. End divorce. Build economy. And ultimately, bring thousands of people into relationship with you through Jesus Christ. We pray. Amen. Okay, so here's what we're doing. We are mobilizing local businesses, local schools, local churches, local nonprofits, the Girl Scouts included, to create 10,000 or more meals in less than 2 hours. All of that food then is distributed through the local school system to children who are on the free and reduced lunch program. Some of you I know right now are asking, I have heard of the free and reduced lunch program. What does that mean, especially when we're living in a county where the average household income is $120,000 a year? Here's what it means. When Jill was telling her story of child hunger, she said this. She said, when I was in middle school, I used to intentionally fail classes so that I could go to summer school to eat. For Jill to be on the free and reduced lunch program, it means that her single mom is making less than $29,000 a year. That is the number for Northern Virginia. So if you see an only child with a single mom in Northern Virginia and they're on free and reduced lunch, the income level at home annually is less than $29,000 a year. So then the question for you becomes this. Imagine that you have no assets, no capital in a house. You probably don't have a car. How are you going to feed your family on $29,000 a year? You're paying rent. You probably don't have medical care. You get the idea. Okay? So those are the children that we're feeding. So, yeah. So that's how we get to do it. Yeah. So one of the guys that I'm learning most from right now is named Scott Sepson. He's the owner of Mod Pizza, which is the fastest growing restaurant chain in the country. This is the company that I just mentioned. Scott is a brilliant entrepreneur. His board of directors is filled with the likes of the founder of Tom's Pizza and Howard from Starbucks and so forth. So I do, apart from just having the privilege to meet with him and learn from him individually, I actually go back in time and I study his life. So the journey has kind of brought me into this weird place where I feel like a little kid in a big man's world with a guy like Scott. But what I found with Scott is that here's a guy that is completely humble and completely down to earth. I mean, his story is insane. A man that, let me just give you the story real quick. Scott and his wife, Allie, moved to from Seattle to London back in the 90s, and they started a coffee company called Seattle's Coffee Company, or Seattle's Coffee Company. 4 years later, they had opened 86 stores, and they sold it to Starbucks, in which time Scott became the president of Starbucks for all of Europe. In 2007, they moved back to Seattle, and Scott looked at his wife, Allie, and he said, honey, I want to start a pizza company. And Allie looked at him and goes, two things. Number one, we don't need more money. And number two, America doesn't need more pizza. So you may be wondering why they even exist today. And here's why. It's because of the third thing that Allie said to Scott. She said, so if you're going to start this company, you have to use the profits to make a difference in people's lives. Today, Scott and Allie refer to Mod Pizza as what they call a second chance company. They go out of their way to hire ex-criminals because they believe that everyone has made a mistake and everyone deserves a second chance. Their employees, they're making pizza, they're right here in Ashburn, are getting paid a minimum of $10.50 an hour. Why? Because they believe that they should be paying people a fair wage so they can live. They give their employees benefits at the same level as the CEO and the same price as the CEO. It's nuts. I'd love to have their benefit package. So you get the idea. And this goes on and on and on. If one of their team members has a death in the family and the death is across the country, the company will personally pay to fly them across the country for the funeral. That story has happened over and over and over. Here's a company that's living the values of the kingdom of heaven. Honestly, better than most churches. And yet, as far as I know, the owners of this company are not yet followers of Jesus Christ. But do I have something to learn? Do we all have something to learn from a story like that? Oh my goodness, yes. So that's some of it. The other side is I like hanging out with people 15 years younger than me. So I learn a whole lot, actually, from these young guys that I go backcountry skiing with. And so I just get up in the mountains with, again, dudes that don't know Jesus, and we'll hike 2,000 or 3,000 vertical feet together and then ski it and hope we don't die in an avalanche. And there's something miraculous about that. I did a ski trip with Jack. He's, by the way, he's the son of that father I told you about that said, I lost my son. I took Jack and I went backcountry skiing. We go every year, but 3 years ago, we went out. We got to the top of this 13,500-foot peak, and we sit down in the snow, and he looks at me, and he's looking out, and he goes, Ron, I just want you to know something. This is my heaven. I looked at Jack, and I went, Jack, it should be. It should be. Because Jesus said this, the kingdom of heaven is here. And it's not just what you see. It's the relationship that we have and the relationship that God's offering. For me, stuff like that is just life-giving. So it's not just business for me. It's for me, everything. It's about the relationship with younger and older men that are far, far from God. Does that help? Great. Yeah. That's loaded. That's all good. What prayers did I pray? I'm not all that mystical about prayers. For me, prayer is just a conversation. And so when I feel that longing in my heart and there's something empty, it's just simple. God, will you feel it? Can you show me what's missing? Can you feel that? If my heart's longing for something more, which it certainly was back then, because I was facing the pain of the church as well, I knew that my heart was longing for something more. So for me, a lot of that even came from my passion and looking at going, God, okay, what are the passions that you've instilled with me and what are the gifts that you've instilled in me? And then how do you want to overlap that with what I do? So a lot of those prayers were, God, would you just open my eyes to what I don't see? But again, that came through in conversations with people. I mean, I remember calling my dad and going, okay, Dad, listen, you know me better than anybody else. What do you think my life mission is? He's a godly man. He loves me. You're not going to lie to me. And so I let God begin to speak into my life through other men in that way. But that needed to be confirmed through prayer as well. And then some of it's just life discovery. So again, I'm not a foodie. I never, 10 years, my goodness, Jim, when I moved here, we never would have had a conversation about me feeding hungry kids in every county across America. That never would have hit the table. So there's an aspect too where mission found me. The guy that I told you about, Daryl, that asked me that question, by the way, he's not yet a follower of Jesus Christ either. It is amazing, at least in my story, how God uses unchurched, pre-Christian people to direct the course of my life. How God uses children of his that haven't yet crossed the line of faith to challenge me. So I kind of listen everywhere. I don't just keep it in the church. I listen everywhere. I just speak. Yeah, I agree with that. I think what I didn't go into in the message tonight, in fact, I pulled it out, is that for some of us, it's the life mission for right now needs to be focus on your kids, like press in. But then I would look at it and go, okay, if you're pressing in on your kids, I see a lot of dads in Northern Virginia that they go sit on the sidelines of the soccer field. Personally, I would look at something like that and I'd go, become a coach, like mentor other kids in the process. Yeah, be there for your kids, but do it with them. It may be as simple as how do you need to begin serving employees at work? You know that an employee is going through a hard time at work, so you happen to know what she likes in her coffee. You go buy her Starbucks and you walk in, you just start serving people. Another way to look at it is, I think very simply is, if you see a need, meet the need. Doesn't matter what it is. If you see the need, meet a need. I think it can be as simple as this. I was at a restaurant the other night and with my wife celebrating her birthday, and they brought out the hors d'oeuvre really late, like with the meal. And the manager came over, hey, that's going to be free. That's on us. Our apologies. I'm like, that's all cool. It happens, you know. And then my wife got a free birthday cake. So a bill that should have been $50 was now $30. So when the bill came, I looked at the waitress and I said, if you were to charge me for the cake and for that hors d'oeuvre, what would the bill have been? She goes, it would have been $50. I said, good. Thank you for letting me know that, because that's what you're getting tipped on. It's that simple. If someone's working in a restaurant, they need that money more than any of us in this room. Bottom line. So I think it's as simple as that. If you see a need, you meet the need. And so I literally, when I go to a restaurant, I never tip less than 20%. Doesn't happen. They need the money more than I do. Even if there's a mistake. Nope, I'm gonna tip on what you should have charged me. So yes to you. For me, I ended up changing occupations. I'm not suggesting everybody change an occupation. In fact, I would counsel you, don't. But I would say this, find meaning in what you have, because your purpose, the mission in life, is going to supersede what you do in many cases. And yet there are other dudes that come to me and they go, man, I have one guy right now. He's come to me and he said, listen, every year for the next 10 years, I want to devote 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% over to generosity feeds in my time and start cutting back on my job. Well, he's in a position where he can cut back on his job at 10% every year and donate it into traveling the country with us and feeding kids. That's his story. So, yeah. 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 Here's what you said, too, that could have been missed, is that it started with your family training your kids in mission. And then it became relational outside of the family. So all of a sudden, a cause started forming because other people are coming into this. The beauty of that story, and this we see this over and over and over again, it doesn't matter if a person's a follower of Jesus Christ or not. People in Northern Virginia want to serve. So if you have nothing else in common with someone who's not a follower of Jesus Christ, You've got that. They want to serve. They want to teach their kids everything you're teaching your kid. And so all of a sudden you take that little passion in your family and you just invite your neighbor over. They don't know Jesus. And boom, before you know it, you're sitting on top of a 13,500 foot peak having a conversation about Jesus. Except it might be coffee, you know. Yeah. I have to talk it through. Yeah. Has to be. So for me personally, there was a gentleman from our church that I was meeting with on a regular basis, talking that through with. I was talking through my father-in-law. I'm very fortunate to have very godly parents on both sides. So my father-in-law was a huge piece in that, and just wrestling all of this through with him, a helmet, you know him. A pastor friend of mine, Aaron Box, he helped us start Restore here. And he and I are close brothers in Christ. And so I just called him and go, here's what my heart is wrestling with. What do you see? What have you seen in me as we work together? What do you, so for me, it wasn't like the formal meeting. It wasn't the round table for me, because I'm actually wired to kind of the informal. So for me, it was very informal, yet very intentional. And it all came back to one thing, which tends to be a theme in my life. Wisdom's found in the counsel of many. Go talk to people, which is why even tonight it was ask. Ask your wife, ask your ask your wife, ask a friend, ask God, ask. Let people speak into that. So that's just how I did it. We tend to be more on the informal side. Okay, so let me give you the backstory on that. When we started this, my wife looked at me and she goes, there is no way we're feeding millions of children in America what we're not willing to feed our own kids. We eat very healthy in our family. Like, good luck finding almost anything preserved in our family. That's just how our household is. So that was our standard, really, really high. So we've had a few meals, but here's what we've landed on. We're creating a black beans and rice meal. Here's why we've done that. Americans across the board, regardless of ethnicity, love black beans and rice. Chipotle, Moe's, like, where are we going? They love black beans and rice. The other advantage to black beans and rice is that it can be cooked in so many different ways based upon the ethnicity of a family or a child that's receiving it. It can be a burrito, a taco, an enchilada, a simple bowl of rice and beans, add water, you have a soup. You have a chip dip. I mean, you can add certain additional spices and send it Cajun. You can send this thing anywhere. So we landed with that. And then it's not just beans and rice. We also have a vegetable blend in it. So all the vitamins and minerals are natural to the product so that they can be processed from a health standpoint by the body. We have beef broth in it for flavoring. And then we have roux in it for a thickening agent. So all of the meals that we've produced, I'm going to go back in time you need to know why I'm about to say what I'm about to say. When we first started Generosity Feeds, I actually worked with an organization that does international food, and they said, sure, leave it local. I went, thank you. Praise God for that. It's cheaper, by the way. And I gave it to Dominion High School with Dr. Brewer. 6 weeks later, he called me and he goes, I need you to come and pick up 16,000 meals. I went, what's going on? He said, people are returning the food and asking us to never give it to them again. Not our food. This is from another company. So now every meal that we've produced, Dr. Brewer actually has signed off on, along with other administrators around the country. And it's all field tested with children because we have to have a product that kids are also going to eat. So we have to have a health standard and we have to have a taste standard that's designed to a child's palate, not an adult palate. Two different worlds there too. So distribution happens through what's called the After School Backpack Program in most cases. So depending on what community we're in the country, We are seeking to understand what the already existing systems of distribution are to kids, and the food goes into that system. So we don't create new systems. If it's the after school backpack program, that's where the food goes. If it's a local food pantry, that's where the food goes. If it's a church that's working with schools to feed kids, that's where the food goes. So it's already created. Yeah. Did I hit everything in that question? Kids are cooking this. Yeah, so it's a four-minute cook time. This is the food I bring camping with me. It's all dehydrated. That's the other issue. If you're sending canned goods home with kids, a seven-year-old can't carry a 10-pound pack. It's bad for their body. It's bad for everything. We tried that here in Sterling. It didn't work. So it has to be lightweight. And then the schools determine how much goes home. So if they know if there are five kids in the family, they'll send enough food with one child to take care of the family. So the schools govern how much a family gets. It says ongoing. So this year in Northern Virginia, I think we've produced 70,000 meals in Northern Virginia this year. For me, they actually went hand in hand. In other words, even when I was having conversation with godly men to help direct the course, it was my job on the line. So, for example, when I was shifting from the church to the nonprofit, it was scary because I was giving up one salary and hoping that the nonprofit could support me on the other end. The reality is, 2.5 years later, the nonprofit still isn't paying me a full salary. So I'm still, and by the way, I moved from Northern Virginia down to Raleigh, North Carolina, so that I could lower my household's cost of living because I knew that would affect the company. So I took steps to mitigate risk. But the reality is 2.5 years later, I'm still living in it. So there's the conversation that helps build the confidence. And eventually, it's a step of faith. Unless you can completely, in my case, could have completely replaced the salary. And we're still working to that. So, yeah. So it's a balancing. Yeah. So, Bob, you asked one other question I chose not to answer earlier. So if I can come back to it. The question was this: you've got a whole group of men in this room that how can they help you? And I didn't want to answer that first. So here's what I would say to you is this. If you're the owner of a business, you need to be inspiring your employees to mission. I would think that you want to be building team and relationship in the context of the business. And so here's what I would say to you. We do work with businesses. We're working with Dun & Bradstreet. We work with Verizon, what used to be AOL. We work with Volkswagen. We work with Accenture. I mean, major companies that we're working with. And we do these events as a team building opportunity. So it's a chance for the employees to come together. It's a turnkey deal. So the company's not investing a lot of time resources into setting it up. We do it turnkey for you. So you can bring in anywhere from 40 to 300 volunteers. And we'll do this event with you, but we re-script it so it becomes a team-building opportunity for your staff. The advantage to a company in that, as you know, is that then builds company loyalty, which ultimately affects your revenue because your turnover starts to go down. There are many stories I could share with you behind that element. But if you're a business owner, I would say, you know what? You need to consider what your business needs to be doing for social responsibility. And if that's the case, we'd love to do something with you. And that's going to introduce you to the local school if you want that introduction. That's going to introduce you to some other businesses if you want those introductions. So some businesses use it as an opportunity, not just for their business, but they say to us, listen, we want to do this for the community. And then we work with you to get you partnered with other businesses, whether it be vendors, whether it be partners, affiliates, whoever, so that you're building strengthen the relationships with the people you're doing business with. If you're an employee at a company, most companies are interested in social responsibility. So go make yourself look good and suggest something. And I mean that. It will make you look good. So just go suggest something. Find out what your company does, what they're passionate about. And then whether or not you work with Generosity Feeds and introduce us, go serve with them and have a good attitude doing it. I think those are the probably two really low-lying fruit. You know, obviously there's donations, but that's not why I'm here. So I would say engage the people that, going back to what Jim was saying, engage people in a mission that's greater than money. Yeah.